Happy Mother's Day to you all. That was for you. And I think about all the kids that are running around here, and I think about, you know, for Carl and I, for sure, that stuff, it goes so fast when they're little, and you are, as the song says, you're going to miss this. But, you know, I think every stage is cool, because the next stage, when the little kids get a little bigger, that's cool too. But for sure, at this time, you're going to miss this. And moms, just especially today, thank you for showing us an aspect of God's love that we could not know without moms, and the unconditional love that you show and how you be a mom. And we thank you for that. So happy Mother's Day. We are in a study of the book of Esther, probably not one of the most popular books that sermons are preached on. It's an Old Testament book, and I was talking to Leona this morning about it, and we do kind of skip over that. That's kind of one of the Old Testament things, and it seems kind of irrelevant, but it's a fascinating story, and I think Leona found out as well. She read it, and wow, it is. There's some good stuff there. So I encourage you these next few weeks to go and read a little bit about the book of Esther and find out a little bit about how God is working there. And last week, just to kind of review, to catch some of us back up here, we found that the Jewish people are, they're in exile in the land of Xerxes, the king of Persia. They were taken away by a previous king, Nebuchadnezzar, from Babylon. They've been there for several years. Some of the Jews have come back home. They were allowed to come back to Israel and to start the process of building their big church called the temple. But many of the people, most in fact, stayed in the area where they were dispersed to. And that's where this story takes place. And so many of these people we found were comfortable in the land of Persia. They became prosperous, and they made their homes and made their families there. But ultimately, God's promise for Israel was to be in Israel, to be in Jerusalem. And these guys were away from that. And now they find themselves on the brink of genocide, because there's one of these leaders underneath Xerxes, whose name is Haman, that just hates the Jews. He hates them. He hates them especially because of the one Jew called Mordecai, and he doesn't just want to kill him, he wants to kill his whole race of people. And that's where these Jews are found. Esther is the adopted cousin to Mordecai, that we'll get to her story a little bit later on. But Haman has schemed this thing to have all of God's people that are in the kingdom of Persia to be annihilated. And last week we found that our lesson, how we can apply that to us, is sometimes as these Jews would have found themselves out of their own country and out of God's will here, to get kind of comfy and to get kind of at ease here, and I can be prosperous here, but ultimately God had a plan for them, and it was in their best interest to find out what God's plan is. And it's interesting here that just this week that we have this hatred between a leader in the Persian Empire and the whole Jewish race. Well, Persia today is Iran, or Iran, depending on how you want to say that. But that's what modern day Persia is. And if you've paid attention to the news at all today, you've got the leader of Iran that is just wanting to kill Israel. In fact, just this week they launched a missile attack on Israel through Syria, and Israel responded to Iran through Syria as well on their forces. So 2,500 years later, you've got Persians and the Israelis battling. It's the same stuff. Same hatred has been going on for such a long time. It's just incredible how this has continued on. I think it's incredible God's people, Israel, are still around. For all of these years, he still has a plan for Israel, the Jewish people in that land. One of the things I am learning personally here a little bit as I'm going through this, I got this picture of a scene from a 1950s movie here, that I think this might be from Samson and Delilah. I don't know. It was one of those Bible movies back in the 50s and 60s. And I put that up there for the only reason is this is I tend to have this mental picture sometimes when I think about stories of the Bible, and my mental picture is these people all look like 1950s, and they've got, you know, the flowing hairstyle of the 50s that she's got going on there, and the lipstick and the makeup, and they all speak the proper King's English, you know, and they're, everything's just beautiful, and they come across as being, you know, wonderful, correct, and polite. And even the villains of the story, you know, even come across as being people of honor. And that's always kind of been a picture of mine when I read this. And the bad thing about that is that's, you know, man, how could I be included in God's story? Because I ain't one of them. You know, I don't come across as being this perfectly proper person here. But I think my perception is wrong. I think that the way God has used people and the people that he has used is a lot different from how that picture looks. I want to spend a little time to maybe convince you as well. I want to give a little backstory to this story of Esther here, and paints a little bit different picture than, you know, Cecil B. DeMille's picture of those grand epic Bible movies, you know, that they had. A little bit different here. Xerxes, he's the king of Persia during this time. He's a war king, and he's in the midst of this transition of world power here. Now, just a brief little bit of history. Daniel was an Old Testament prophet, and he would have been around just before this time. He was taken away by Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon, and Nebuchadnezzar has this dream, and he says, Daniel, tell me about this dream, what's going on? And Daniel reveals to Nebuchadnezzar the great world powers of the world. And Daniel says, you, Nebuchadnezzar, are this first kingdom. And if you remember, there was a statue. This statue, there was a head of gold, and there was a chest piece of silver, I'm going to get this wrong here, but then the torso was a different color, and then the legs were something else. He says, there's going to be four big kingdoms in the world. You, Nebuchadnezzar, represent Babylon, and you're this first kingdom. But then after you is going to be this second kingdom that's going to come, and it's going to be the Persians, the Medo-Persian Empire. Well, that's where we're at. And then there's going to be a third kingdom that's going to be Greece. Greece is going to take over the Persians. And then finally, there's going to be this weird kingdom down here, and it was made up of, the toes were made of clay and iron, and that represents the Roman Empire, which would have been around at the time of Christ. So you've got Babylon, you've got the Medo-Persian Empire, you've got the Greece Empire, and you have the Roman Empire. So Daniel's already told this story here. We find ourselves in the middle of the Persian Empire, that the battles with the Greeks have already started. Because Xerxes has been in battle with Greece all along here. And he's this warrior king. And he's in the midst of preparing to go back and trying to kick the tails of the Greeks. And a couple stories about Xerxes that I found this is non-biblical, but it's of a Greek historian that talks a little bit about the character of the king. You know, I showed you the movie last week, and the guy kind of looks like a lover boy as he was meeting with Esther and that stuff we showed last week. But, you know, really there is another side to this guy. Here's a couple of pieces of information that tells you a little more. We'll watch that. Let's go ahead. This is from the movie 300, by the way.
Let me guess. You must be Xerxes.
Come, Leonidas. Let us reason together. It would be a regrettable waste. It would be nothing short of madness for you, brave king, and your valiant troops to perish. All because of a simple misunderstanding.
A little bit different depiction of Xerxes, of how they represented this guy than what we saw last week. The first thing I noticed there is what I don't really know here is, like, at the end of the sermon, when I go to step off of this, you know, Mike, why aren't you coming up here so I can step on your back and walk down? I thought that was really cool. But no, it's a different picture of who this Xerxes guy really is. The other couple of pieces of information I had in there, one of his royal officials, before they went into battle, had lost one of his sons. And he went to Xerxes and said, you know, is there a way you could spare my other son from going into battle for fear of losing his son? Xerxes' response was, little graphic. He took his son in half, and he put a half of his son on each side of the road, and the armies marched down in between. That was his answer to his son's request. So you get a picture a little bit about what Xerxes' character was like. There's another story where one of his female family members had done something. Doesn't really matter the details, but he had parts of her body removed and sent. She was mutilated, scarred up terribly, and sent home. So a little more of a picture, a little bit of the historical background of Xerxes here and what kind of person he would have been. A little bit more of this story. This really is going to be all out of Esther 1 and 2. And I'm going to read all this because there's a lot of stuff there. But I want to summarize a little bit about this background. I want you to get a feel for what's happening here in regards to, we'll get to our key character, Esther, and her cousin Mordecai. But Esther, the book starts off at a party. Xerxes has planned this banquet. He has this royal banquet that the Bible says lasted for 180 days, a half a year. That's a party. And after that, it says he has another party for 7 more days to include all the people that weren't included in the first party. I want to make sure everybody's there. So for 187 days, they are there. And it's pretty much about him displaying his glory. Look at me, I am Xerxes. You know, and look at my glory, and look at my wealth, look at my power. And it's really about bringing him attention. Very exquisite, the Bible talks about how things were served and how things were decorated with gold and fine linens. Lots of things were going on. A lot of drinking in the Bible. It says that there was no two wine glasses were alike. Every one was custom fit for thousands and thousands of people. The estimates on the amount of animals and meat that needed to be prepared, the number of loaves of bread that had to be prepared, the gallons and gallons and gallons of wine that had to be served in these glasses that, or goblets that didn't match. Lots of drinking. It says there were no rules to the drinking. You could drink as much as you want, no problem. You could drink as little as you want, no problem. And it was not grape juice. So somebody could say it's in the Bible, it had to be grape juice. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was wine. A lot of drinking, 187 days of this going on. And then it says Xerxes has his attendants or his chamberlains or his eunuchs send for his wife to display her. In the first chapter in around 10 and 12, it says that these eunuchs who attended him to bring to Queen Vashti to him, because she was very beautiful, for she was fair to behold, the Bible says, but Queen Vashti refused to come to the king's command conveyed by his attendants or his eunuchs. At this, the king was enraged and his anger burned within him. So you kind of get that feel, that guy stepping off that thing, you know, this guy. And he sends for his beautiful wife to come in and parade, you know, and she says no. You know, ticks him off. And so what is it we are going to do? She refuses to come. What is it we should do? She says no. There's something about this she doesn't like and she refuses. We don't know. The Bible doesn't say why she did, but there was something about it that she says no to. So what does Xerxes do? Well, he does this. He calls together his nobles, the guy that were really put in place to give him advice. What is it we should do? And so one of the nobles stands up and says, you know, here, what we got to do here. He said, there will be no end to the disrespect of our women to our men because they will know what Vashti did to Xerxes. We can't have that. That's what these wise guys are saying. There will be no end to this disrespect. All women will disrespect their husbands, it says in 1 and 20. Send this edict out. Send this letter to everywhere that Vashti is no longer allowed here and we're not going to have any more of this disrespect coming for the women. Let all of the lands in all of the languages in all of the territories of your great kingdom say every man should be a ruler over his own household. So that's what they did. They sent this out. Vashti's booted out. The edict is sent everywhere throughout the entire kingdom that every man should be a ruler over his household. My timing on picking scripture is probably not the best regarding, you know, this story and it being Mother's Day. Guys, I would not go home at the dinner table today at Mother's Day and say, hey, you know, they called these the good old days. And no, don't even go there. You know, that this was the good old days where we're going to have no disrespect coming from. Don't go there. It won't be good. Timing wasn't good. So what do they do? Well, they end up then, Xerxes is, they feel bummed out, and so we got to find another replacement. And so what happens here is these same officials say, let's go get another queen, one that's going to be better than what Vashti was. And so what they do is they get all of the, as many of these young virgins as they can throughout the empire to come and for months and months get into these beauty treatments with oils and perfumes so that they can go in and display their beauty to the king and he would select one as the new queen. The one that is selected is Esther, the Jew. And that's how she becomes queen here. And that's in the midst of this story. She is the one that is chosen. So now as I go through these details and I think a little bit about my old perception of these wonderful people and how they, you know, speak in King James Version and whither thou goest and no, I don't see the scene playing out this way. It is much different than that. This, I'm sorry, it's a drunken party. 187 these days these guys have been partying and there is no problems with this leader being a womanizer and a murderer. And this person that is just very disrespectful to life. And he surrounds himself with attendants that will serve him. I'll get a picture of this. We'd call them attendants or chamberlains or eunuchs. He brings these guys in to serve him, but in order to trust these guys, these men, he unmans them because that's what a eunuch is. He surgically makes them not a man anymore. I'll let you fill in the blanks. Another great Mother's Day conversation for you. He makes them, that's who's around. So think about the character of the guy here. Think about this whole scene, about what is going on. And then he wants to parade his trophy wife around, and she says, no. It's a world that I think we have a hard time understanding. And then one of these guys, Mimikan, is one of his attendants. He's the one that says, well, what should we do? And Mimikan stands up and says, here's what we ought to do. I'm trying to picture this. Mimikan, this guy that's going to, Xerxes asks, what should we do? You know, I picture this guy as, you know, he looks kind of like Harry Carey with the Cubs. You know, that big old guy, and he's 187 days and drinking Budweiser's, you know, because that's what Harry Carey drank. You know, what should we do? Xerxes asks, holy cow! We can't have these women talking like this, you know. You just see, we gotta do something. His wife is probably, you know, she's probably 6'4", meaner than dirt, and he's like, we gotta shut these women up. You know, you can almost see how this all played out, but 187 days, what are they doing? And so they come up with this thing on what they're gonna do. It's not this wonderful, righteous scene here of how people would have been behaving. It's just people. It's people being people and just messing up. Whole another world, whole another set of values. Xerxes and what he's doing here and his leaders, it's much more about power and dominating over other people. Much less reverence for life and its sanctity. You know, we are at a point in history here where we don't have this, a people that is living by that greatest command where God says, go and love God with all of your heart and your soul and your mind and your strength and go love your neighbor as yourself. That's not the MO of how these people operated. That's whole different. This is self. This is Xerxes and me, my kingdom, and all these people about self-serving things that they can do. Paul writes in Ephesians, he says this. This is Paul, Ephesians, New Testament. Hundreds of years later, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. He did this to make her holy, cleansing her by washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself. That's a whole nother philosophy, a whole nother way that we as followers of Christ, that's how we as men are to be. We are to be lovers of our wives as Christ was a lover of the church. That's not how Xerxes in this whole kingdom is. It's total another world here. Total different world here that we would be used to. But yet this is where we find Israel. This is where we find God's people. God called his people to do this stuff, eventually to bring us Christ, eventually to bring us these teachings of Paul that tells us about husbands ought to love your wives. He's using Israel, and Israel's stuck over here in the midst of this Persian empire here, and all of this stuff that is just going about it the wrong way. Here they are, under the reign of Xerxes, about to be exterminated by this edict that Haman has presented to the king because he hates so much Mordecai and all of the Jews. But in the middle of this, God is at work. And this is just one of the fascinating things I think about Esther. In the midst of all this stuff that just seems not biblical, it's not like God's people ought to act, but in the middle of that, God is at work. His name's not mentioned in the book of Esther. We said that last week. God's name is not mentioned throughout the whole book. Some people think we shouldn't even have Esther in the Bible because God's not mentioned there. But he is at work. And when you see how he is at work here, it's just a wonderful story. And one of the mysteries, how God sees his plan through, it's hard to get. But God has this plan for people, and he's using Israel to accomplish his will. But he does it in such a way that he's not violating human choice and the human will of people. We still get to choose. We still get to make choices, but God is using those choices and those circumstances to accomplish exactly what it is that he wants to have done. And I think that is, for me, awesome, awesome news. Because I'm not those perfect-looking, perfect-speaking, and acting perfectly righteous kind of guys. I'm not that. But God finds us in the middle of where we are, in the middle of the circumstances of my life. And he uses me there, and I think he uses you as well. No matter where you are or what your abilities are, or your past or your pedigree or your social status or whatever, your age, he wants to use you in significant ways because you are his people. No matter where you are, he wants to use you. But in this story here, Vashti had to say no. There was something about this thing where the king says, bring in my smoking hot mama wife Vashti because I want to parade her around. And there's something about that where Vashti says, not going to do it. So she said no. She said no. She probably knew there was going to be consequences, but she stood up and said no. What a powerful word two little letters are that all of us probably need to say more often than not is no. Vashti did just that. Mordecai took a stand. We'll find out about this later on, but he was to bow and worship this evil leader. Haman, not going to do that. He took a stand. Not going to do it. And we're going to find out about the courageous decisions that Esther made as well. These were choices that God's people need to be made in order for that plan to get fulfilled. God just didn't do it. He just didn't come down with fireballs and lightning and this is what we're going to do. He used these people and the choices that these people made for his will to be done. In the midst of all of that stuff, all of that stuff of the Persian Empire, his people is there and he's using them. And I think that is true for you and me as well. You know, clearly I think we can look back at this story and see a people, this Persian Empire as a people being, you know, very far from God. Historically, we go back 25 years and you see how people behave and we know that's not consistent with what God would have us do. But what will the historians say about us and our culture, America, in 2018? What will they say? Because in the midst of all the stuff that we have going on here, we have people that are making right decisions for God as well. And there's stuff going on. Just as Mordecai, just as Esther, just as Vashti made these decisions, we're in the context of a world that probably is ungodly in other ways as well. And God's people are called to make decisions happen today. You and I probably live in a time where there has never been the amount of freedom and the resources that we have in all of mankind's history. We have wealth, wisdom, and the means to accomplish so much in our country. So much. Probably in the history of man. We've never been able to have this. But yet in our country, we have big problems of drug abuse. Terrible problems of drug abuse. Half of our kids are brought up in homes where the mom and dad don't live together anymore. Big problems that we have. How will history look at these things? We have pockets of poverty, and we have places where our elderly are just abused and mistreated in America. How will history look at this as we look at Xerxes and the things that were happening there? Greed is rampant in our country as well. I think history is going to look back at the cause that Sonny bought the flowers from today is the right to life. I think history will look back on our culture here and remember in the year 2018 about 700,000 babies were aborted. And since Roe versus Wade, there have been approximately 60 million babies in the United States aborted. How will history look back on this empire? We're in the midst of stuff. You know, we look back at Persia and see all this junk. We think, wow, how could God use people there? He did. We got junk in our country as well. And he's looking for people like Mordecai, like Vashti, and like Esther to bring his will to a world that so desperately needs it. God doesn't need us to accomplish his will. But I think here we see people who did do the right thing, and God used that. Vashti said no. Mordecai refused, and Esther was bold. Maybe there was a time where they felt, we're so far away, and our country is so insignificant. We too can make excuses and say, we're too busy. God is just so silent in 2018. I'm too old to be able to be used. Our country is so far from God, and the church is just so weak. What can I do? But I think God uses these situations that you and I find ourselves in to work through and behind the scenes to accomplish his will without violating our own will. But he's looking for people to stand up and act. He awaits us to do just that, to say no to the things that are contrary to his will and to his character, to refuse to be caught up in the ways of the world and to act courageously towards advancing his kingdom. He's looking for you and I to do just that in the midst of this country, in the midst of this kingdom, the realm that you and I find ourselves in, to step up and to be Jesus Christ to our world. Let's pray.